I'm so cold and pure, I think I've got a real bad cold. I need to get out of the house instead of doing what you tell me to. I caught the COVID cooties, now my life is like a movie.
I got the COVID cooties, now my life is like a movie.
You're listening to Fakeologist Audio, a periodic audio where I explore the world of media fakery. You can find my blog at fakeologist.com, where you'll find all the links to the live stream and audio archives. You will also find links to my sublogs, forums, email, PayPal, Twitter, and YouTube. We now use Discord for all our interactive audio and text. To join in on any live conversation, go to our main page and connect to the Discord server on the right, or visit bit.ly/fakechat. Now, here's your host, the Fakeologist, Abarato. Alrighty, good evening. It is May 18th, 2020. It's 1900 in the Eastern Daylight Savings Time. That song there you're listening to is COVID Cooties by Symbia. And I got that off IPS, Infinite Plane Radio. Fantastic little ditty. And tonight we have an evening broadcast, which we don't have very often. Normally you hear me on the Fakeologist audio chat with the Australian Roundtablers. We had one yesterday. And actually I haven't even posted. Did I post that? Yeah, I think I did. We had another one this morning, actually, so I'll have to post that. But tonight, we're doing something a little different. We have a well-known Fakeologist member, Farce Value, and he has brought along a really special guest tonight. That is his wife. So we're actually going to be talking to a spouse of a Fakeologist who may or may not be completely on board with what Farce Value is up to. So we thought this would be an interesting conversation. And because we're not trying to recruit people to our cause, but anyone that's sort of on the fence or married to a Fakeologist is always going to be an interesting person to talk to, because they are sort of by just default exposed to the ideas of Fakeology. And Mrs. Fakeologist also said she might join in as well, now that she hears another spouse of a Fakeologist. So Farce Value, welcome. And how should we address your wife? Mrs. Farce Value?
That works.
Okay, Mrs. Farce Value is speaking first. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic here. We're on the north shore of Lake Ontario in Toronto, and you guys, I think, are down in the Miami area.
That's right.
Indeed.
Down in Miami, so I'm sure it's a little bit warmer than we have it here. And just so you know, people can and are probably listening live right now. We don't normally edit these broadcasts, so just be aware that people are listening live right now. Actually, I'm looking at the server and nobody's listening live right now, which is fine because we don't really. Oh, actually, no, sorry. Four people listening live right now. Never mind. United States, United Kingdom, and Canada. So let's get right to the beginning with Mrs. Farce Value. Tell us a little bit about what you know of Farce Value's foray into Fakeology. We're not here to discuss personal details, but tell us what you know about his interest in media fakery and 9/11 and all the thing, moon landing, and now we have probably the biggest psyop of our times, the coronavirus hoax is what I like to call it.
Well, it's kind of weird because when we first met, what seems like a long time ago, he was different. He had different beliefs. And so our conversations were about, they were completely different. So I was like more conservative and he was more on the, I don't know, Democrat type political spectrum. So our conversations and our, you know, discussions centered around that. And then he just started shifting. And it's so weird when somebody who has those types, you know, is in that world and then they start shifting over to fakeology. Uh-huh. It was really like shocking. It was like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you saying right now? You know, it was just, it was bizarre, like bizarre in a good way, you know, not in a bad way. It was just like, it was just so strange. And so we would have, and I mean, I don't, you know, I don't listen to these things. I mean, I listen to him, so I don't know what you know or you don't know, but we would have conversations sometimes for hours and I would say, you're trying to convince me, like you're trying to convert me and I'm not there. I'm not buying it. I don't believe it or, you know, whatever. And I will say that there is some stuff that I think, yeah, there's something there. There's other stuff that I'm just not buying. Like I don't see it. I don't get how it could happen or whatever, but it's been like, it's been super interesting, and mostly because he did such a 180. It was so different from, you know, when we first met. And the ideas, because of that, when I contrasted them, they just seemed really radical to me. Like, what? You know, just like super, super strange and, you know, begged a lot of exploration or just like dismissal because it just seemed too fantastical.
So one thing about Americans that I guess the rest of the world doesn't always understand is you guys divide yourselves between Democrat or Republican almost all across the board. People always, and I guess, and I'm also an American and I have voted in the last couple elections. I'm not really totally cognizant of how it works because I've only been participating in the last little bit, but it appears you have to identify to maybe the registrar, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and you don't even have to register, but it's sort of a divide that even happens within households. Or, okay, you're a Democrat, so therefore you think this way, and I'm a Republican and I think this way. So did you automatically, at the beginning of your relationship, have that conflict where one is on one side, one is on the other, or was that something that didn't bother your meeting?
No, that was from the beginning, but it wasn't a huge deal. You know, I came from, you know, I worked in business, and so I had been on the opposite side. So
okay.
He had different experiences than I did, and his background just lent itself, and he can talk about that more than I can, but his background just lent itself to different beliefs or norms than I had experienced in my business background. So we would have discussions about, you know, whether government was good and whether government was helpful. I was on the it's not helpful side. You know, what government's role was, you know, what it should be doing or not doing, what people's roles were. And so our conversations kind of centered around that, not necessarily whether he was a Democrat or I wasn't, but more on the principles or, you know, the beliefs that those parties are thought to hold.
Okay, so when did Farce Value start talking fakeology? When did he start introducing the idea that there's a problem with the way the media is portraying the world? So how long ago was that? And what were the signs that something was changing in him?
That was well into our relationship. I think we were already married.
Mm-hmm.
We had already been married for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years by the time he started talking about it. Maybe a couple of years. We were together like 3 years before we were married. And then we got married. And it started with him questioning the 9/11 thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what year that was?
Let me.
Okay.
I'm not correct, but just flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah.
I checked today, and I've been a member at Clues Forum since 2011, so that's 9 years. And it was a little before that I really started digging into 9/11 and found my way there. But it was really about 2008 or 2009, during the housing collapse, when I came to the realization that I had been doing pretty much the same thing I had been doing for most of my life, just working and trying to make ends meet. And all of a sudden, the economic rug was pulled out from under my feet due to no fault of my own. And mm-hmm. I really started questioning how could something like this happen, because my industry was devastated now for the third time in 20 years. And I had a friend that pointed me in the direction of, it was actually Lou Rockwell was the first exposure that I had to real alternative media.
Okay.
And which is an Austrian economic sort of free market, more libertarian at least, and anarchist in some cases. And I started realizing that the ideas I had about government were probably not very realistic. And having been a musician prior to that, I just fell into the liberal camp as that identifying with other artists, and anybody in the artistic camp is usually going to identify themselves as a liberal generally.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and it wasn't too long after that I started researching 9/11 and finding all the problems with that.
All right. When did you start telling Mrs. Farce Valley of what were you thinking, and how did she receive that right away?
Well, it initially started with the economics, and I think it was about that time that I was probably listening to Alex Jones a lot, and it was a very alarming thing, and I expected the jackboots on the street and FEMA camps. And, yeah, she was very disturbed and put out by that and stressed, I think. And it wasn't well received, and I was obviously not presenting the information in a way that would have been well received.
Okay. Mrs. Farce Valley, do you want to tell us what happened when Farce Valley started talking about Alex Jones yelling into the microphone?
I absolutely want to tell you. So, you know, we live in the South, and we had one year we had a hurricane coming, and he came home, and, you know, we were turned on the TV, and they just had the whole state just covered with this hurricane. And he said to me, he's like, so what I'm seeing here is like this wall of water that's just going to take us over. And I was standing there, I was gobsmacked. I was like, what are you talking about? And it was the same thing with the fakeology stuff. When he started talking about, I think it was, and it was the inflection point for me, like when I just dug down and I was like, I don't want anything to do with this. Don't talk to me. Which, of course, just made him double down and want to talk to me more, was when he said, well, you know, there's going to be jackbooted thugs coming through the door to take you away. And I just wanted to shut down. It did not make me want to engage. And it just made me think, okay, he's just become some like fringe radical, you know, whatever. And I'm going to have to pack his bags or something.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, not that extreme, but it was really frightening and it was really scary. And there wasn't a lot of context to go with it. He was freaked out and, you know, exploring all these things. And he just wanted to share with me like the stuff. And it's a lot of information to take in. You know, and so when I wasn't responding fast enough, he said the thing about the jackbooted thugs coming through the door and taking me away or having me on my knees or something. And I was just like totally freaked. That that was a lot.
So that was the Alex Jones who was.
Yeah, that was the FEMA camps and the coffins and the drills and the troops on Jade Helm. And the fear porn that goes along with all that sort of stuff. And yeah, none of that ever really seems to materialize.
Not yet.
This time, and I guess at the time, you realize that you discover this for the first time, and you think you have an idea of what's going on behind the scenes, and you're like, "Whoa, look what they're doing! We better do something. We got to get ready for this. This is going to happen any day." And in reality, it's probably more, you know, the psychological part of it. And the driving the fear is really the tool, not so much the execution of all these diabolical plans.
Mm-hmm. So after Alex Jones, you were probably like me. He had a lot of videos that you may have watched, and one of them was on 9/11. Is that your pathway to 9/11?
It probably went like Loose Change.
Yeah.
And then Judy Wood. I actually bought the Judy Wood book.
Yeah, so did I. Did you show it to Mrs. Farsvalia?
Yes, he did.
Well, Mrs. Farsvalia, what did you think of 9/11 before Mr. Farsvalia started talking fakeology? What was your take on 9/11? Because obviously you experienced it as an American. You were probably in America at the time. So what did you think happened in 2001?
No, I believe the story. I saw it on TV. I saw it happening. I watched that second, you know, the second plane on TV. I saw it. And so I was like shell-shocked like everybody else. It's like, wow, what, you know, what's going on? It was a dramatic day. I mean, it was, and psychologically, it was really jarring.
Mm-hmm. Were you a follower of the media before that? Are you someone that watches the news?
No, I my whole life I've actually attempted to stay away from the news. I actually delve more into the news now than ever. But at that time, the only reason that I saw it, that I saw what was happening, was because I was supposed to be going to a trade show. Mm-hmm. So I was home well past the time that I would have been going to work. Mm-hmm. And just had the TV on because I was killing time until I had to leave, and that's why I saw it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen it. I mean, I remember getting to my destination and standing on the corner to cross the street and talking to a guy who had no idea what had happened. Mm-hmm. And just like me being the one to say, oh, you know, I saw this thing on TV, you know, an hour ago, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so like some people didn't know about it at all. And I believed it. I spent the whole day, you know, friends calling. I had lunch with two former New Yorkers ruminating about what had happened and what this meant for the world. It was a big day. I mean, it was a big
day. Oh, it was a huge day. The whole world stopped for most people at that time.
Yeah.
It was definitely the 9/11 has always been the subject of fakeologist.com, my blog. It's basically what I did, is I started a blog because I wanted to do my writings. I already had a blog on right-wing stuff because I'm like you. I was a bit of a Republican type, and I like to put my views out on the internet way back when you could do it in a forum, well, in a blogging form, because I've always been a bit of a writer. So I was writing before Facebook and all these other centralized social media sites, because you could. It was quite easy to do if you knew a few things about setting up a computer. So when I started going into 9/11, which was a fairly random way I entered into it, I decided to switch my whole right-wing blog to just an exploration of media fakery and 9/11. And I wanted to see basically if anyone else was doing what I was doing or thought or saw things the same way. And naturally, the people that were already doing it, looking into it, came to me and said, yeah, we've been doing this for years. You're way behind. So I said, oh, wow. I figured somebody looked into it besides Alex Jones. And then I got a fairly decent number of people gathered towards my website. And that's why I've been focusing on it, because I figured this was the one event, after looking into it like I did, that it appears to me that the whole world was fooled. And I thought, if this is possible, which I never would have imagined it to be possible, that everyone in the world could be fooled, there could be a few people that did it, and then just a few less people, maybe a few more people that know they did it, but everyone else is totally oblivious to it. I figure, well, if I concentrate on this and try and discuss this on a weekly basis or until I'm really bored with it, then if people can understand that, then all the little things that happen in every country and every state can sort of be explained by understanding how 9/11 was done, because it was such a big one. Everyone is familiar with it. And that's pretty much how I came about going to Clues Forum, where Farsvalia went to, and then Farsvalia probably through Clues Forum found me discussing it in a more dimensional way other than just text. And that's why I've done what I've done. And now, of course, we have something that is looking like it's going to easily eclipse 9/11, this whole coronavirus hoax, which I immediately think that most media is lying, is fake. So I'm always looking at things in the inverse way, where everything is fake until proven real, where the most people look at it as everything real until you can find a problem with it. So that's really how I got to where I am, in case Farce Value hasn't really explained that to you. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. So I've been married for 27 years. And of course, I was not a fakeologist at all back when we were married. And so my wife has had to watch me go from a regular media junkie, which is what I was, to obviously a full-fledged fakeologist. And I even coined the word, because I didn't want to be known as a conspiracy theorist, because I don't think that's what I am, because that's a negative word. So I just used fakeologist because it was fairly neutral, and most people would ask you, what is a fakeologist? Because they had not, they're probably not familiar with it. So yeah, so that's how I got to where I am. So my wife has had to endure my musings on a daily basis as I point out little stories here, big stories, as I go back in history. And for the most part, she's just an independent thinker who is exposed to a fakeologist as opposed to a fully fledged fakeologist. So getting back to you and your experience with Farce Value, when did you start thinking that Farce Value was on to a useful way of looking at the world? When did you start to think there's something to his view of the world? Was there a time that occurred?
Well, not through lack of his efforts, but I think that when so the 9/11 thing, the thing that got me thinking about it, and there's a whole lot of stuff wrapped up in there. I mean, I still have a lot of friends left in New York, and, you know, he would go on about, the mister would go on about how, you know, it was all fake and, it, you know, they're all crisis actors and the whole thing was a put-up job and whatever. And I remember talking to a friend of mine whose wife at the time worked in one of these offices that had lost, like, there was some financial group that had lost, like, more employees.
Cantor Fitzgerald, maybe.
Yes. And she worked for them. Thank you. Okay. She worked for them. And I said to him, I said, listen, I said, does your wife know anybody who's actually dead, who's actually gone? And he said, we go to a funeral almost every night. He's like, I'm sick of it. So, you know, Farce Value's like, the whole thing is fake, they're crisis actors or whatever, but I have a friend that I've had my whole life, you know, who's telling me that he's at a funeral every night. So, like, reconciling these two things was really difficult. The thing that made me start thinking, well, something's up here, was, I don't know if he found it for me or if I found it on my own or whatever, but it was an architect's blog or something, and they were just talking about how structurally it didn't make sense.
Yes.
And I'm always asking questions. I make him crazy because I'm like, well, why this? Why that? Why this? Why that? You know, like, why? And when I read that, I said, wow, that's interesting. Like, if the mechanics don't make sense, then that gave me more to think about than just, you know, him saying, oh, they're a bunch of crisis actors and it's fake. Well, it's not fake because it happened. I mean, they came down. So that did, you know, that was real. We're not imagining that.
Yeah.
And I had people in the city that were experiencing consequences of it, real or not. They were experiencing consequences of it. Mm-hmm. So it was that, the looking at how the buildings came down, that made me start thinking, well, that's kind of weird.
So you were looking into it yourself. You went to Architects and Engineers, which is a group that is trying to get an investigation into how exactly the towers came down, and they disagree with the NIST report, which is a group of, I can't remember the exact name of the acronym, what it stands for, but the National Institute of Structural Engineers, maybe. And they did a report, and so they're questioning how it came down, because they said it can't come down with the heat of a fire from jet fuel, which doesn't burn at a hot enough temperature to melt the structure to bring it down in, coincidentally, 9 and 11 seconds for the respective towers. Isn't that strange? That is the official story.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
He's always pointing out these 9s and the 11s, yeah. And I'm like, no, it's too much. Or he'll show me numbers that add up to 11, and I'm like, nope. Nope, not going to work. Or they add up to 9, and I'm like, nope,
yeah,
not going to work.
9, 11, 33. I call these Mason-Feedy. These are occultic type numbers where certain groups in the world, and almost every group has numbers that they value. Chinese, Jewish, Jesuit, Masonic. They all have numbers that they favor. And we can all understand that people have their mysticism built into their religion that they can believe in, but to see the numbers recur over and over again and some of the events that we study is more than a coincidence. And I call it signatures. They, like an artist likes to sign their work or just code their work, so anyone who is in the know can see that there is something going on more than to what the eye sees. So go ahead.
Well, okay, so you said that the towers, you know, 9 and 11 seconds respectively. And if I was talking to Mr. Farce value over here,
yeah,
I would say, well, how did the alleged perpetrators of this know that one tower would come down in 9 seconds and the other one would come down in 11 seconds?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much Farce value has explained the fakeologist view of the 9/11 movie, but...
Well, I'll answer that question.
Oh, go ahead, you're here.
So...
You're still here.
So the 9 and 11 seconds, I believe, is going to refer to the time that we see on a video recording, in quotes, of these buildings collapsing. And so if that's accurate, which I've never done it.
I've never timed it either, but that's the official story, yeah.
But my take on that is that the videos are not representative of a real-time capture of live
yeah they're
events.
Not the videos of the actual collapse. They are the representations that were shown on TV as real, and that's one thing that is difficult to understand for the average person. It certainly would have been difficult for me to think that they'd run a movie at the time that this whole thing was happening, and they'd call that live or real footage. That is a trick I've never heard of when it comes to TV, and I don't think anyone else has either. So the idea that they could run pre-recorded footage or pre-created footage and call it live, that would be the first time I would have ever thought, wow, that's an amazing little trick, that because I've never thought of it. And because it says live on the screen, I figure, well, that means it's live. But, of course, you could put any set of letters in any order on a screen and portray it as real. But, yeah, that is a very, very good trick, if that's what they did, which I believe they did.
So, and after saying that, that would just make 9 and 11 seconds respectively part of the script.
Yes.
It was written. And then the elements were following the script afterward with the production of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, so have you explained, Mrs. Farce Value, is Farce Value, the mister explained every element of the 9/11 story from a fakeologist's point of view to you, or do you only let him tell you information that you question, or have you let him sit you down and give you the whole story from start to finish as he knows it?
The short answer is no. I can tell you why, but the short answer is no.
Why? What's
Because, you know, when you want someone to hear you or, you know, listen to what you're saying, there's like a way that you do it. And he was so passionate and so immersed in this thing. And the fact that I showed any resistance at all made for very almost contentious conversations a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just shut it down. So I don't think you've ever told me like A to Z or anything.
Oh, it's such a long list. It's crazy how much I actually know. And that's the oddball thing about it is most people don't know all the details of the story because they get the information in a few second sound bites on the news repeated over and over. But it is kind of fascinating when you really start looking at the cast of characters and all the things that are part of the backstory and who these people are and what the details are. It's, yeah, a lot of it's pretty fanciful. And they do put a lot of effort into writing the details of these events.
Well, Mrs. Farsdale, have you ever heard of a psychological operation? Has that phrase ever come into your knowledge sphere?
Sure.
Because I'd never heard of it before. When did you first hear about it?
Probably in a movie, but the mister started using PSYOP, you know, coffee. So it became a pretty common word in our house.
Oh, okay. But before that, you'd never heard of it. So or from a movie,
no,
rather. From a movie,
maybe in a movie, but not like in normal conversation.
Yeah, I'd never heard of the phrase either. And it seems a little technical, and I don't really throw it around to the people that are non-fakeologists around me because it almost sounds mystical, but I think it's a really important word for people to learn because I think that a big chunk of the military all around the world is involved in creating these stories using some of the best writers, movies, screenwriters, book writers in the world. I almost think there's an exchange that goes on between, okay, you write the story for us and we'll promote your book or your movie as long as it has a few elements of some of the things we want in it, for instance, because I think most of these operations are really well done and are really in depth. And of course, 9/11 was the biggest one that we experienced. And now we're, I would say, immersed in the biggest one of all time. A worldwide event that is total dominance with a massive economic hit to go along with it. But we'll move on to the corona thing that's going on now and get your take on it. But so you only pull information out of Farce Value when it comes to 9/11 you haven't had him explain the whole thing to you because does that mean you're not interested really? Or is
no,
it just
it's not that I'm not interested. It just never, again, he consumed so much information and it was just all coming. And the thing is that if you want somebody, my thing is always like everybody's on their own path. They're on their own journey. So they open themselves up to the information when the time is right. And you can share the information. You kind of just leave it there. And like it's up to them to pick it up and, you know, look at it or not. You can't force somebody to experience the same thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of like how it felt. And possibly also because it was just such a drastic thing. It was like there's just no way. And I, for the record, I do think there's something iffy about the towers. I think the corona thing is a total put up job. Mm-hmm. But the 9/11 thing, we've never sat down and gone through the whole thing. And I have not asked to sit down and go through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking that each time one of these happens, I think that there's a few new recruits into the fakeology community that are not necessarily connected to the earlier events. And I might be speaking for Miss Farce now, but I would suggest that she is looking at this like independently of the previous events and coming to the conclusion that it's a put up all on its own without having to put it into context of the earlier events. And there's probably a lot of people in a similar position now that are coming, you know, on board to wake up to the idea that this is not, there's something missing with the story. It doesn't add up. And they're totally unaware of maybe previous PSYOPs, but they're starting to look at things now. I don't know if it's going to lead them to look backward
Well, yeah. Not a lot of people read or are interested in history. And, of course, 9/11 is 19 years old this year, so it is definitely a generation ago now. It's a pretty coming close to a full generation. So, Mrs., has this, as far as this interest in fakeology, affected your relationship in any way? Ooh, probing.
Why, yes, it has.
How so?
Okay. he gets very passionate, you know, and the thing is, like, you know, for me, when I used to do sales, it's like you go in and you explain all the benefits. Here's why you want this product. Here's why this service is, why you can't live without this service. You know, think about it. I'm going to follow up with you on Tuesday, you know, that kind of thing. And his style back then was like the bull in the china shop. And so after a certain point, it was just like, it was too much for me. It's like, I can't digest the information. I can't keep consuming it. Like, I have other stuff to do. And it was just like argument. And it was an actual argument. And he said something about the red, you know, he's had the red pill. Mm-hmm. And that was the other thing, is it created a lot of friction because he was the only one in the know, and only he knew what was happening. And everybody else is just, you know, a dupe or a stooge who doesn't know what's happening. And that mm-hmm. included me, obviously, right? So, of course, I didn't mm-hmm. take kindly to that.
Yeah.
He just felt, you know, so much conviction in his beliefs that he wanted me to be on the same page. And I was like, we're not going to be on the same page all the time. It's just not going to happen, mm-hmm. you know? And so that created a lot of friction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It really did.
The fiction causes sense. Friction. Farce, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, we'll call it a truce. Well, I kind of look at it like, and I respect her position that I'm a little bit consumed and a little bit obsessed with it. I really, mm-hmm. I want to know how things are really working, and I want to try to figure, you know, I'd like to know who the real people that are pulling the strings are. We probably never will. But at the same time, if you want to keep your social life intact and live in the actual reality and not spend your time analyzing the constructed reality, that's probably a more worthwhile way to spend your life. And at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's antisocial. It is almost antisocial behavior talking fakeology, isn't it? Do you think that?
To a degree, yes, I do. Because once you've kind of stepped into the area of, and it's really just questioning the idea of like, well, why is it that when I see the news banner on TV that I automatically accept that as true? That's the question. And it's sort of something that people, I don't think they ever really ask it or consider it. It's just an assumption that's made that is an objective presentation of captured reality when it says news. And it's a really hard idea to question, like, well, is that really true? Because everything else we see on TV is scripted and produced with all the Hollywood lighting, direction, effects, mm-hmm. actors, and everything, except the news. And for that one half hour or hour, then we put away the suspension of disbelief and we believe for that period of time. So to talk to somebody that hasn't started to ask those questions, I think it can be very unsettling. And I don't know why I didn't resist it like most people did. I don't have an answer for that. And now it's kind of hard for me to participate in water cooler conversation because it's always done within the framework that
they're accepting reality and you're questioning it immediately.
Right, right. Because you're discussing it if it was reality, and I'm going to be saying, well, how do we know that this actually happened? Mm-hmm. Begin with.
Can I jump in there for a second?
I wish you would, because you know what? Mrs. Farce Valley, no offense to Farce Valley, but you're a really good speaker.
Well, thank you. So two things.
But first value is good, too, but I'm enjoying your perspective. You're very well spoken.
Oh, thank you. So two things. One is I work in an industry, or I did work in an industry, where I butted up against government, and I got to see up close and personal, more than most people, how things are orchestrated and industries are controlled, and, you know, whoever's got the money gets their way, and there's an agenda all the time. And so I got to see that up close and personal, and that changed me more than anything. The part about living, the thing about living with a fakeologist, right, is that it seems to me, and I've only ever lived with one, mm-hmm. it seems to me that being a fakeologist means that you have to be annoyed or miserable or unhappy or, you know, angry at the world. And I just don't, that's not my thing. Like, yeah. I recognize that, you know, we're a bunch of puppets and they're having their way with us. And that is because of the work that I have done. That's what opened my eyes to it. But I still have a good time. I go dancing, or I used to go dancing. You know, we entertain a lot. I have a lot of friends, you know, very social, and the whole, like, to me, if knowing all these things is going, because, and this is what I tell him all the time. If knowing all these things ruins your life, then they won.
Yeah, that's true.
The only thing they can't take away from you is that, and you're giving it up. So that's another reason that I'm kind of resistant to it, because it's like, well, I don't see that your quality of life is all that great. Like, it's not bringing you any joy. You
yeah,
know?
That's so true. Do you ever question Farce Value's sanity when it comes to being this
all
deep
the time,
into it?
But not because of this.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you don't think that people that are deep into this, down this rabbit hole, have lost their brains?
I'm all about freedom, and if that's the path that you're on and that's the journey you want to take, power to you. Like, mm-hmm. you do you. You know, mm-hmm. as long as you don't have to convert me. Mm. You know, I have these friends that are swingers. You know what
Ooh.
Swingers are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And,
okay,
yeah.
wow.
And
have they tried to convert you?
Like,
come to
well,
a party.
They were inviting me
oh, no.
to, like, come to their swingers thing. And I was like, isn't that the reason that you have, like, your own club so you don't have to recruit civilians? Like, isn't that the whole point? So, like, I know that's your thing. I know, you know. But it's the same thing with the fakeologist thing. If it has to be, like, this indoctrination thing, then I, you know, no. Like, I'm on my own path. I can think for myself, you know, and I'll get there when I get there. I mean, there's other people on the spec. I mean, I talk to some of my friends and they think I'm crazy. They're like, oh, you're so out there. And I'm like, I'm really not. Like, I could show you other people that are way more out there than I am.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't mind if people have their own path, as long as it doesn't mean that I have to be on that path with you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Farce Value, did you know about the swingers?
I heard about that.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
I don't know if I heard about the invites, because I never got one. But,
wow. Did you let her know if you're interested, because she can hook you up? What about swinging fakeologists? That would be a great. I might join
there
that club.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Wow, that would just be something else. Let's.
You're going to get a lot more recruits.
Well, I was just thinking, as if our niche isn't small enough already. We wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, the fakeologist swinging community is super tiny. I don't know if they have their own blog or Discord, but yeah. Walk in here. Put your key, what do? They put the keys in the bowl at the front hall, and then we're talking about 9/11. And then then we can decide who goes home with who or wherever, whatever happens. Yeah, that would be something else. Wow. Well, now we're in, why don't we talk a little corona? Because we've got about an hour left, and that's about as much time as I can give as well. What, let's talk to the missus first. What do you think is happening right now? Are you completely on board with everything that you're hearing? Or because you are, you're with a fakeologist, I'm not going to call you a fakeologist, but we know you're with a fakeologist. Farce Value is a confessed fakeologist. So what do you think is happening based on your great experiences in the world, and also what do you think is happening with Mr. Farce Value's view of it? Because you must have to merge them together to get your own view in some way.
So, not surprisingly, we diverge on a few of the Rona things.
Rona.
So this is what I've said to him. And I will tell you that when it started, like I kind of watched it from the sidelines at first because, you know, we were still open and we were still like, you know, and it was just kind of like, oh, wow, look what's happening. You know, I was talking to my friends in New York and it's like, oh, it wasn't affecting us directly yet. Mm-hmm. You know, but when everything started shutting down and the stock market started tanking, like I went through like 2 weeks of not being able to sleep. I mean, I was massively stressed out.
Oh, wow.
I mean, brutal. I couldn't. I was just.
Do you have
terrible.
A big IRA?
Well, it doesn't matter how much money you have. When you see it shrink by 30% overnight, you're not going to be happy.
No, I know. I know.
Yeah, and so I was, you know, and I did schedule a call with the financial guy, but I was just like really stressed out about it. I was like, oh, what are we going to do? And then after a while, it was like, okay. I need to figure this out. Like, where do I stand on this? What do I believe? And I started researching. And because of my prior work, I know to stay away from the mainstream media because everything there is, you know, it's all fear porn and, you know, there's always an agenda. And I actually found a couple of guys on Twitter that were posting good information. And one of them was a former New York Times reporter. So immediately I was skeptical because the New York Times is a total rag. Mm-hmm. And but he had really good information. And he had charts and he had information. And I found it comforting. And then there was another guy called The Ethical Skeptic. And he posts really hardcore data. And that stuff really started making me feel better.
Okay.
And then I started looking at the numbers myself, and it was like, okay, this is definitely not what they're telling us. This is not. And where Mr. Farce and I, you know, diverge is that I will say, well, I think there's a virus. It's just that they're using it as an excuse to do this total shutdown and, you know, exert control over everyone. And he'll say, there's no such thing as a virus. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, can you just like stay with me on this? You know, so many times we don't even get past that. And, you know, he gets mad at me because I'll say, you know, the virus, and I put my hand up, but I'm like, I know what you think. Just skip it, you know, because I just want to say what I want to say. So that's where we diverge. But I think on most other stuff, we're kind of on the same page about what's happening, with the exception of the whole, you know, whether the virus is real or isn't real or, you know, whatever. I think on the other stuff, we're on the same page.
Farce, what do you want to say?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I think actually, and I was a little bit somewhat interested in the virus. I had been looking into the AIDS thing, which is a very, very sensitive topic because we had a family member that was lost due to that, so it's a little bit touchy. But I had been looking at like Infectious Myth and Stephen Lenka from years ago, and
right.
his ideas about viruses and how they're misrepresented. And then there actually is, and that's the one thing I want to say about what's happening now. This has led me to connect with a lot of friends and stuff on Facebook recently, and I'm very disappointed. Although I don't know why I should be. I've never discussed 9/11 with them or anything like that before, but for some reason it seems like this is a little bit more universal. And, you know, they're just so bought into the mainstream. And I think a lot of why they're so have so much trust in the mainstream is due to the scientists. And so recently, and I don't know if you noticed, I think it was this morning maybe we were talking, I posted some links from the BBC and the National Health Center or something and a third one or something. They were talking about how the scientists can't replicate their experiments.
Yeah, you put that up. I saw that.
Of the major medical publications say peer-reviewed studies are corrupt and worthless and not reliable. And so when people are talking about scientists, like one of the last things I posted with a friend of mine, was, well, you have a lot of trust in scientists, and it sounds to me like you have more trust in the scientists than the scientists have in themselves. Because according to their own people, they can't reproduce their work, and they don't find the peer reviews useful or reliable. So it's kind of strange to me that the public has all this trust in the scientists, but yet the scientists don't.
And, right, some scientists. But, of course, you're also putting a link to the BBC, and we already said we don't really trust the media, so we really don't we can't be too confident in what they're writing either. I mean, that's one of the huge disadvantages of not believing the media at face value, because now you have to wonder what's the agenda, what's the veracity of the story you're reading.
The way I usually like to pursue it is I like to find references presented by the authorities that people trust that contradict their own narrative. And so that seems to me to be useful. It's like, well, you're saying you believe these people today, but yesterday they said something that's in complete contradiction to what they're saying today. So why do you believe them today but not yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's a way to get, you know, to stimulate some thought about alternatives, but.
All right, so you're on the sort of the same page I am with regards to the coronavirus, and that is that you have gone right to the root of the issue, and you question the whole virus theory itself, which you have been exposed to, as you say, because you looked into the AIDS. The whole AIDS story, which I did as well, because Mrs. Forest Valley, what we do is when we realize as fakeologists that everyone in the world can be fooled by what we think is a phony event, a psyop, as in 9/11. So we go backwards and we start reverse engineering a lot of the things that we already took for granted as real, but didn't really have a great explanation for all the discrepancies in the story. And then as we unpack them, we realize that the same thing applies to these as does 9/11, that most of it is based on a central lie, and the realism is built over top of the lie. So, for instance, if the coronavirus is not a real virus, because if you go right down to the core and realize, as we have, that viruses are not communicable. They are just what they call microenzymes or whatever the word is. There's so many different words for the exosomes, the basic particulate in our bodies. And if it appears that this is the basic falsehood, then everything that we're doing now, including destroying the economy to try and save everybody, is based on a central lie, then it really makes you wonder, you know, what is the real agenda if this isn't actually making people sick? And I'm just curious from my point of view to your point of view, because I can't really talk about this kind of stuff with anyone that's not a fakeologist in my family, because they've written me off completely. They shut the conversation down after 30 seconds. They say, well, we know you don't believe in it, so we're not going to go there today. And they just treat you like a small child. So I'm just curious, in your mind, what do you think of the idea that the central core of this story is a lie, that we can't catch a virus, but everything built around it, all this destruction, is real, because we're all witnessing all the fallout that occurs when you shut down an economy deliberately. So how do you rationalize the explanation, I guess, that we've come to?
Well,
what do you think of our point of view, I guess, is a better question. Is it possible?
My first instinct is to say, I don't care if the virus is real or not. I'm in total opposition to what's happening. Mm-hmm. Even if the virus was real, even if there was this thing out there, I would not agree at all with what's happened.
Okay.
So it's almost irrelevant to me whether the virus is real or isn't real. The other part of that is that like this one guy that I've been following on whose information I've been reading on social media, who's totally against this whole thing. And, you know, he takes a lot of time to point out, you know, all the consequences and, you know, how none of this makes any sense and that kind of thing. But he's married to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife believes that the virus is real. Like, she hasn't said, but she's in total opposition to how this has been handled, right? Mm-hmm. So I almost don't, for the purposes right now, because it's the, here's the thing. Choose your battles, right? If I have to convince people, if I have to convince my friends or explain to them why I'm defying, you know, orders left and right, because mm-hmm. that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If I have to explain to them why I'm doing it, it's much easier to explain to them that locking me down is not right. Like, you can't do that to me, mm-hmm. right? Than starting with the premise that viruses are fake, they don't exist, it's not true, it can't, because then you lose them.
That's
so
true.
I don't even go there. I go to the part that affects them, the part that they can connect with faster, which is their liberty has been severely curtailed,
mm-hmm.
and they can't go out, right? They totally resonate with that. When I start talking about, well, my mom had the flu last year, and you know, and then I have to get into, so I don't even bother.
That's
and
true.
So anyway, that's it.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Sometimes Faris and I are so far down the rabbit hole. We're so detached from the people that are around us taking in the mainstream that we don't even know where to begin. And we only have minutes to deal with anyone at any one time before they have to move on or they have something else to do or they're distracted. So it's a where do you go from here with us all the time? Where do you start? And then you just start firing links at people and their social media, and then they get annoyed because you're bombing them with too many links, and maybe some of them are not good links. And so I actually tried to boil it down to one web page, but it's so hard. I never know what to put right to the top because I don't want to lose a potential audience like yourself that's skeptical, but you're certainly not a fakeologist in the traditional sense that Faris and I are.
Well, I mean, you know, reading something, going to a website or a blog and reading something is different than talking to someone one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of being, you know, having a good conversation and being a good listener or whatever is knowing or asking what motivates people. It's like, again, it's back to sales.
Yeah.
You find out what the pain point is or what interests them. And you can always find a way to loop in the point you're trying to make that directly affects them. And then they can see it. And this is what I tell the mister here all
yeah.
the time. They don't have to agree with you when you're telling them. You just give them the information, and then people ruminate about it. They may never think about it, but most people, because we're surrounded by, you know, mostly smart people, they'll think about it. You know, maybe mm-hmm. not today, but it'll be in the back of their minds, and eventually they start connecting some dots, right? If mm-hmm. the goal is to convert them immediately, then you're always going to lose.
Yeah. We could learn a lot from you because you obviously have a lot of experience in sales, which is...
I have experience convincing people.
Yeah, well, it's a real talent. Most people... Do you think most people could be a salesman or saleswoman?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Do you have to be do you have to be a good liar in any way to be a salesperson? Or...
No, I don't think so.
No. So you could tell the truth about whatever you're selling... But you have to tailor it to what they think what they don't know they want, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, you know, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and she said she's so over this whole thing, and she's got a high paying job, and you know, she's working from home. She's unaffected,
okay.
you know, except for her portfolio, but otherwise she's unaffected, and you know, she's so over it, and et cetera. And I said, well. I said, so what do you think? I said, are you going to support like the continued lockdown? And she's like, no, this is ridiculous. She's like, we can't stay. But 2 months ago or a month and a half ago, she was all on board. She didn't want to see me. She didn't want to be, you know, within 10 feet of me because mm-hmm. we're all infecting each other and, you know, we're all going to kill each other. And yesterday we were talking face to face, you know, standing a foot apart. But it's just little by little that she's come around to that because she's feeling the pain. And again, she's not suffering financially. She hasn't been able to travel, so she's been trapped in her house. But now she's feeling the pain, and it's like, oh, well, a good reminder is that, you know, this overreaction is what has caused you to be trapped in your house for 2 months, and you haven't made your sales quota, so you're never going to catch it. You're not going to catch up. You're not getting the bonus in 2020, and it's, you know, whatever. So anyway, you always have to find a way, or try to find a way, to bring it back to something people care about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The word overreaction caught my ear just now.
Oh, did it?
And what was that a reference to?
The reaction to this virus?
Well, the official reaction to the virus. Most people are either... we always have divisions in society. So now we're seeing a division between people that think it was an overreaction to people that think, no, it's the right reaction. And... That might be the new divide right now. And if you could see the script, which we wish we could, the idea is if we let things out too quickly or open too much up, then we could get it much worse. And my idea is they're going to slam us even harder in September, only because they've been leaking that part of the script out all over the place. It's not like I'm clairvoyant. I'm just reading what I want to read, just like we believe in what we think we see. So I think I'm seeing signals that they're going to smash us even harder in September when they said, oh, that was too quick, we went too fast, and they make up all kinds of numbers to indicate that and then smack us down even harder, which is definitely concerning, only from the point of view that economically, how much can the economy or people take? And Mrs. Farsvalue is right. It almost doesn't matter about whether viruses are fake or not, whether they're communicable or not, because now we're just dealing with what's happening right now in reality. Reality says we're self-imprisoned and the economy is crashed. And it's at its knees, and will it be able to get back up, or will it just stay down for good and we have to just, nobody knows where we resurrect this thing.
I'm sorry, you were...
Well, I was just, the reason the word over is because I look at this is what a lot of people refer to as a plandemic.
Yes.
I don't look at it as an organic phenomenon that people are reacting to in any way. I think it was set into motion primarily through media. I don't know that. I think if there is a phenomenon.
I never blame the media, by the way. I think that's like blaming the highway for car crashes. It's the conduit. Somebody has to feed it. Someone has to get in their Ferrari and speed down the highway. And who is getting in the Ferrari? Who is driving the narrative, because they just feed it to the media. The talking bubble-headed blonde or transvestite on the news is not the one making up the story. So
I think they know better.
Yeah, but they're not going to say anything.
A scripted version of a construct. But the point being, it was set into motion by someone. And I was just going to say, as far as if there are any actual effects that are affecting people physically, at best, I might consider the virus narrative a cover for some toxicity that they may know about that they can blame on a virus, which I've kind of come to the opinion that may have been what happened with some of these other things, like the Spanish flu.
Yes, I agree with that.
That it could have been toxicity due to armaments and metals and certain things, other effects of the environment.
Yeah, or widespread burning of coal and houses, that kind of thing.
So that's just why I commented on reaction, because I don't look at things as a reaction so much as following a plan.
Go ahead, Mrs. Farst.
Yeah,
give her the
mic.
When
we were talking earlier about, you know, convincing people and or not trying to convince people, you know, sometimes you just give back their own information and let them see that what they're doing doesn't make sense. You know, we went to dinner at a friend's house a couple of weeks ago, and when we and there were other people there, and when we walked in, the hostess didn't give me a hug. She stepped back and said, "Oh, I'm not going to hug you." And I said, "I don't need your stupid hug. I'll hug this guy, you know." And so he and I hugged it, you know, whatever. And so we were fine and chit-chatting and the whole thing. And she said, "Well, you know, we need to be really concerned. You know, I have to worry because I have a compromised immune system or whatever." And I said to her, I said, "Well, let me ask you something." I said, "How truly concerned are you? We're in your house. You're drinking wine, which the Surgeon General said not to drink alcohol during this, you know, alleged virus or crisis."
Yeah.
I said, "You're trusting us to cook our food and not infected it with, you know, some kind of germs." I said, "And you're not wearing a mask. And none of us is sitting 6 feet apart." I said, "So how do you square that with your, oh, I'm concerned?" And she's like, "Well, I guess I'm not as concerned as I thought I was, you know?" So sometimes people don't even realize that they're, what they're doing is at odds with what they're thinking, or they think they're thinking.
Or she's virtue signaling, just saying, "Hey, I'm telling you that I'm concerned, and this is my signal to you that I'm concerned, but it doesn't make sense." And virtue signaling rarely does.
Our friends know better than to virtue signal around us.
But I do have that impression, though, sometimes when I see militant mask wearers, that they're some ways they want everybody to be bought in the way that they are, because I'm speculating, but there may be some doubt in their mind, and they're like, "Well, if I can get everyone to do this too, then I don't have to question why I'm doing it, because I know that everybody's doing it."
Well, there's so many ways to read into the mask reading. I think the only reason that I would wear a mask is I don't want to cause a disturbance. But we've been told, or part of the narrative is that because I could be asymptomatic, which is the greatest lie of the whole thing, that I could be causing you harm by not doing it. So nobody wants to go out and start swinging their gun around, because that's antisocial. Of course, in many states, you can open carry, but if you're just holding it in your hand and swinging around, that is the same message you may be giving if you're not wearing a mask, because we're told that it's aerosol-based, and just coughing or even talking to someone too closely could transmit it. So I think if there was a good reason that, and it was true, that would be the only convincible reason to me.
Back to the science part of this narrative, and in the link I think I posted this morning, there's already about 6 or 8 papers, and there's probably more by now, that have been pulled under retraction watch about corona and some aspect of it, whether it's testing or transmissibility or whatever.
Yeah.
So this idea that the science is this infallible thing, you know, and we're so reliant on that in a faith-based way.
Yeah, it's a new religion.
Yeah, I look at it that way.
Yeah, but you're skipping over the part that some people are legitimately scared. Like, you had them at Corona. Like, they're actually frightened, and so they're wearing the mask, and they're thinking, "Oh, we need to save humanity." I mean, they're misguided, but they're scared.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't wear a mask, you're not saving humanity. You're threatening humanity. You're threatening them. That's what has been pounded into people. Yeah, I was trying to say that there's so many ways to read into wearing a mask and not wearing a mask, and you're not going to convince people of the science or the basis of this lie in 30 seconds, which is about all the time you might have, or less, with the perfect stranger. Of course, if you're sitting down for dinner with friends, you might have more time if you get onto the topic. And yeah, what when you guys go out to dinner, and how do you deal with having a fakeologist by your side, Mrs. Farsvalia? How do you deal with that? Because I'm not a very social person. We don't go out to dinner for dinner parties. So I'm just curious, people that like yourself that do that, how do you, are you worried that he's going to say something and embarrass
all
you?
All the time.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll say something like, "Could you please like tone it down, because everybody's not on the same wavelength as you." And, you know,
is that before you go in? But like,
yes.
You must wish that you could mask him up before you go out or muzzle him up.
You have no idea.
This mask thing must be just, you must just love it because you say, no, you're wearing a mask when we go out to dinner. And you know what? There's going to be a ball on the other side of that mask. You're going to be chewing on it. You are not talking.
Yeah, if only. But no.
Poor Farsalia.
No. I don't. He says, the only thing I ask is, number one, we have a large extended family, and we're never going to not see our family. So take that into account, right? And number two, how you deliver the message is sometimes more important than the message.
Okay.
So that's it, right? If you want to rile everybody, and you know, there's that whole shock value, and you drop the squirming, you know, thing there for everybody to look at, and then you're like, yeah, soak it up, people. Well, nobody likes that. It doesn't engender people to want to talk to you more. It certainly doesn't open their minds and say, oh, this person has something interesting to say, right? So going out with him, I mean, and he's very social. I mean, he can be very sociable, you know, and you know, we met up with a bunch of people last night and stayed off of the more hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
What can you talk about? Because even, well, you can't talk about sports because there's no sports going on. How can you stay away from Corona at a dinner party? Because it's the only thing going on right now.
I actually think this one's a little bit easier because there's so many ways that you can work into questioning the narrative that aren't necessarily like, saying that movie you saw on TV was not a live event. It was a pre-constructed movie. That's very jarring.
Yeah.
But when you can say something like, well, why are the hospitals empty? Or why is the mortality rate flat month over month, year after year? Mm-hmm. That doesn't really say pandemic. And so you can question the pandemic idea just with the fact that there's not bodies piling up everywhere, or say, do you know anybody that has it? Because if the news wasn't broadcasting this, we'd probably not even be aware of it. So
yeah. The sun still comes out. The weather still is weather. Yeah.
And so I think there's opportunity this time to question the narrative without it being so maybe jarring and confrontational, and you know, with less cognitive dissonance, maybe.
We did talk about Corona last night, but we also talked about a movie that I had watched. We talked about music. We talked about my friend's new job. We talked about the craziness at another friend's condo. It's like this huge condo, and they have all this crazy stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the work somebody's planning on doing in their kitchen. We talked about family. I mean, there are other things to talk about, you know, everything. And this is the thing. It's like if you would, can I curse here?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, so if you accept that we're being fucked.
Right. Ooh.
We can move on now. Now I can enjoy my glass of wine and my dinner. You know, like, there's very little that I can do about it. And I'll be damned if I'm going to be miserable because we're being constantly manipulated and, you know, puppeteered. So I'm going to hang out with my friends and we're going to have a good time. And we laughed a lot last night. And every time we get together, we have a good time, you know, and it's just like, I will not give that up. So yeah, we're getting screwed, but why should I give over the last thing that makes me happy?
Well, you got a real practical wife there, Farsalia. That's, I guess she keeps you very level.
Yeah, I'd probably be floating away like a helium balloon.
You'd be floating. You'd be deep in the rabbit hole with the rest of us. But she drags you out of it, it seems like, to bring you some normalcy. I hate to use the word normalcy as well in these corona days where they're abusing that word now, too.
Yeah, for sure.
No, that's you have a very practical way of dealing with things, Mrs. Farsalia, and I could see why you don't want to go too far down. And I know when I have get-togethers, I'm always biting my tongue because when current events come up, I don't even... I'm almost self-censored the whole time. Now, Corona's going to present a much bigger challenge because this is so all-encompassing. Everyone's being affected. And, you know, I'm watching my sister's business be shut down. She's losing just a ton of money every month. And it's just painful to watch all these people suffering. And I guess me telling them what I think is the truth isn't going to really help them at this point of view because they can't start singing the chorus of fakeologists because it's really not going to be listened to even if they sing it out. So,
yeah, sister think about the shut? I mean, what does she think about the reaction to the alleged virus? What does she think about it?
Well, she just thinks it's what needs to be done. And she's somewhat in the medical field. I won't give her exact, but she's in the medical treatment field. She's not a virologist or any kind of medical doctor, but she's in the healthcare field. So I wonder if she is more constrained by her organizations and her colleges if she spoke out, then she might be in danger of promoting disinformation. Where I'm in a position where I'm totally independent, mostly independent, or I don't really have much contact with the public and in the transportation business that I'm in. So I still wouldn't want to be necessarily identified as a dissenter. Nobody really wants to be a dissenter. But on the other hand, I don't want to just keep quiet when I have thoughts in my head. So I have this avenue and my written blog, and that's mostly enough for me because, as you've said, I don't want to really make people miserable by knowing what I know and knowing that I think there's much larger, deeper things going on in the world, and we are definitely being herded around like sheep, and there's not a lot we can do about it, and the people that do the herding know we can't do anything about it. It's just so frustrating because we have the most powerful communications system that's been built in the world, this internet, yet we're still super restricted because people are so hard to convince of anything. And of course, that's what we're experiencing now. Our controllers know how hard it is to get through in this infinite world media. So they literally have to lock you up in your house and time you out to get your attention. And that's what they've been doing. And you are going to take in this information whether you like it or not. And there is nothing you can do about it. And your friends and your family are going to be that police force that keeps you, the dissenter, down. Because they're going to tell you you're crazy or you're potentially harming them with your opposing views. It's just an amazing checkmate situation for all of us that don't take the mainstream as it's served to us.
We were commenting earlier about how the United States is kind of split into like blue and red.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like a lot of the mask debate is now split down, you know, political lines.
Yes, they politicized so many aspects of the debate. And we've just gone so far away from the central lie. I wish I could just keep getting back to it because it's just so central to this whole thing. Because everything that is happening now, all these debates, all these fights in stores, the masks, how do you conduct business, standing 6 feet apart, it's just such a crazy reaction, especially if you think the whole thing is fake, especially if you think you can't get your virus. And we're all having so many conversations that are so far away from the beginning of this that it's just overwhelming. Everything has been turned upside down all over one central little lie. And that's what's so frustrating to fakeologists, because we can't even go back to the beginning of the story now because people are just so overwhelmed with the avalanche of information that's happened since that time, since 311, 311 is the new line 11, by the way, Mrs. Forest Valley, in case you didn't hear that one.
He told me.
Oh, yeah. Good. He's doing his due diligence to keep you in the loop.
But I think it seems like a little lie, but once you look into the germ versus terrain theory, the Bechamp-Pasteur debate, yeah. And you realize that the germ and virus is foundational to the entire
medical
pharmaceutical
system.
Industry,
yeah.
More or less, which is, it's a leviathan. It's so integrated into government, media, the vaccine industry, the schools, the hospitals, health. I mean, that
food,
it's foundational to overturn that idea that germs and viruses are not infectious. There is a lot on overturning that idea. And I think that's one of those things. It's just like when I sort of started questioning the fundamentals of government and I found out that it's just a lot of irrational sort of mysticism and superstition that makes up government. But you have all these giant buildings and people running around in suits and these documents and the Bill of Rights and the founding fathers and all of this just elaborate theater and pageant up around this thing. But when you get down to the fundamentals, it's just, it's
they're just making up rules, boss people around.
So I think it's a similar thing, when you start talking about that idea and maybe people they can have a subconscious idea. Well, if I overturn this idea, then all the other things that are built on top of that are going to come tumbling down. And I just don't know if I'm ready for that.
No,
you don't think?
No, I mean, it's like, so you said earlier, you understand why I wouldn't want to go down the rabbit hole.
Oh, yes.
So I go down the rabbit hole. Then what?
Do you have to stop speaking to your friend? Yeah. What do you? Yeah. Where are you?
I feel like I know enough to know that we're totally being fucked over. Mm-hmm. So what more? What else do I need to know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ab, are you familiar with Plato's Allegory of the Cave?
Yes, I've heard it a few times, but you can explain it.
Well, I reviewed it again recently.
Okay.
The story is about some prisoners that are chained, and where they're only the only thing they can see is the back wall of a cave, and there's a fire outside the doorway of the cave, and people and things move in front of the fire and cast shadows on the cave, and that's their reality, is the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the Socrates story, the philosopher escaped the cave and make it out into reality and see the sun and the moon and this, and then it said that if he wanted to go back into the cave, he'd probably literally have to drag someone out. And the sun would be too painful to his eyes, but once he became the moon and the stars and realized the shadows weren't the real world, and he might want to go back and share it after he had gone through all the trouble to get out and get there and become accustomed to the light, he would come back when his eyes readjusted to the dark. The people inside might consider him blind, and they might want to kill him because if you go outside the cave, you're going to be blind and you're going to be affected. And it just seems, it's such a very interesting allegory, I think, for the television, these flickering shadows. And it's so old. It's like 500 BC. And then I think about Einstein's definition of insanity and doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Like, well, yeah, I guess Socrates was doing it 2,500 years ago. And,
If we go back that far, if that is a real story, it's a good story. Mrs. Farce Value, is Farce Value smart?
Yes.
Do you wish he wasn't a fakeologist?
You want
at
me
any
to
time?
Leave the room and ask the question again?
You'll just listen to the recording later.
Yeah, I rarely edit. It's too much work. Do you wish he wasn't a fakeologist?
Oh, sometimes I think about that, yeah. That is actually, that I think about life easier.
Do you ever tell him he has to stop doing his research because it's
no?
I know you're big on freedom, personal freedom, so you wouldn't do that.
No, I would never get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if he wanted to follow, if he wanted to follow a particular path,
mm-hmm.
and I was not on board, and after a certain point, if it interfered with our marriage, then we would have to decide, can we stay in this relationship or can we not? I mean, I'm a firm believer that nothing is forever. Right?
Okay.
So if it ever got to the point where I just couldn't live with it, then it's up to me to.
Yeah.
To him. He's taking care of himself. If he wants to make accommodations for me, that's up to him. If I want to make accommodations for him. If he ever decides that I'm just not on board and I haven't had enough red pills and, you know, I'm just not, you know, carrying the party line here enough and he can't live with it, then, you know, he's going to have to do what he needs to do. You know, the other day I was watching a movie and it was some typical dystopian future thing. And I paused it and I started telling him about it. And he said, why are you watching it? It's just full of programming. And I said, I know it's full of programming. It doesn't matter. I already know it. So I'm just going to enjoy the movie because it doesn't have any effect on me. I'm just going to enjoy the special effects and the other stuff. Mm-hmm. When it gets to the point where we can't have that conversation, then, you know, something else needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, do you think fakeology is like an addiction or, do you think fakeology is like an addiction where you just can't stop researching things?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because, I mean, sometimes, you know, I'll say something like, well, how many hours have you put into blah, blah, you know, into researching whatever, and you're telling me you have all these things you need to do?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, I mean, it's a decision, obviously, but, you know, maybe it is an addiction. Some people have an addictive personality and, you know, they replace one addiction. We have a friend who replaced drinking with, you know, running, and now he's a triathlete, you know,
right.
And he replaced one with the other one. So maybe it is an addiction, you know. The thing about addiction is it's not really a problem until it starts interfering with your relationships.
Yeah. So you would make a decision if he got deeper into this and it affected your relationship.
He actually had to tone it down because I was on the verge of making a decision.
Oh, boy.
Because it was just too much. It was hardcore. It was too much. And it was constant. It was nonstop. Like, we couldn't talk about anything else. And if I didn't want to talk about it, he'd say, oh, you never want to talk about it. And I'm like, dude, I'm logging hours with you talking about this stuff.
Oh, you're funny. Yeah. And you now know, damn corona thing comes by, and this could KO the whole thing. I mean, this is so big.
We had to make corona rules because he gets up earlier than I do. And then, you know, I'm not a morning person. I would get up, and he's all chirp, you know, perky and ready to talk.
He's
about
already
corona.
Done a podcast.
Yeah. And I'm like, I haven't even had a cup of coffee yet. Like, I can't. Or, you know, late night when we're getting ready to go to bed and, you know, and I'm like, we cannot talk about this stuff right before bed. It just can't happen. Like, no, we, you know, it's gotta be like some rules.
Yeah. And the fact that it's not going to end anytime soon, must just be torturing poor Farce Value there. I know. There's a fatigue setting in for me on the whole thing because it's just my blog has never been so busy. And at the beginning, I was getting all kinds of new people coming through looking for answers. And I get messages on my phone saying, hey, you've just posted 69 days in a row. Congratulations. The software is thanking me for my efforts. And it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, but it is on everyone's mind. It's what everyone's talking about. And I don't know if it's a good thing or not to be a fakeologist, because I guess if I believed it, I'd probably be more worried. But because I'm not being economically destroyed right now because of what I do, it's not as big of a deal. But I figured if I was not doing anything, for a job, then I might be one of those guys with the sign going down to the government buildings and yelling and screaming with a megaphone. But because I really think that I want to wake people up, because if they don't wake up, they're going to be marching down to the Army Depot and getting something shot into their arm, which you may or may not believe is a good thing. I don't even know myself, but I tend to think it's negative. So it's this is sort of Alex Jones territory. The guy that we used to make fun of, even as fakeologists, because we didn't like what he was representing, even though he was speaking to us in certain truths. So this is a big one, and I don't even know how to proceed with it as it keeps going on, and it seems to, at least where we live, it's sort of escalating at the moment, and we know that there's more to this whole thing. This is monumental.
Yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, and it is. I'm not where you are. Mm-hmm. With like the 9/11 thing, but this has me like really concerned. And again, because of just strips our freedom, the little bit that we had left, you know, it just finishes stripping it away. And it bothers me that more people aren't bothered by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was telling somebody, I was telling the mister that I was talking to somebody, and they said, well, I'm comfortable wearing the mask. And I said, well, I'm uncomfortable that you're comfortable.
Mm.
Like, why are you comfortable? There's no good reason for it.
Yeah, this mask is a big divider. It's a big divider because it's so obvious. You're either wearing it or you're not. It's not something you can hide. It's not something that can... It's right. It's literally in your face, and it becomes a talking point. And then you could talk about Corona all day long because of it. But
yeah, and you're a good person if you're wearing it, or... You know, you're striking out for freedom if you're not wearing it. And it just depends on who you happen to run into that day.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, I find the whole thing exhausting. And I figure if this doesn't wake people up, what else could? You literally have to take a club and bang them over the head that things aren't right. And there should be an alternative explanation besides just the mainstream people fighting over, do we open now, do we open later, do we stand 6 feet apart, do we stand 10 feet apart, how do we get on a bus? I mean, all these little problems that never would have occurred had they not decided to literally take the whole world and start shaking it upside down and dropping it out. I don't really know if being a fakeologist is really helpful, but I still like being one because I like to try and figure out how things are done and how the magician does their tricks. And at least I have the relief in my own mind, even if I'm delusional, which I don't think I am, that you can't make me sick by talking to me. And there's so many more ways that make more sense, the terrain theory, where I can keep my own health based on many principles of keeping a good terrain. So in a way, I'm happy that I'm a fakeologist, because I never would have... Who looks into the germ terrain theory these days? Even who would look into that if they weren't a fakeologist? Because if you're just arguing about masks and how your portfolio is looking, you might not ever question the origin story of this whole thing. So in a way, I'm kind of happy. And I really think that you're a good balance for farce value. I think you're good for him, just like my wife is good for me in that way. She's not a full fakeologist, and she doesn't, but she's super aggravated like you are for her liberties being infringed upon, like I guess many people are. So,
well, I'm not a fakeologist, but
mm-hmm. You live with one.
Well, and I don't think that I'm going to die of some virus. And, you know, whenever I say that to someone and they're like, oh, well, you better be careful, I'm like, I'm ready to walk through a COVID ward right now. Like, let's put money on it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm that convinced. I have zero concerns about dying or getting sick over this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to die one day, but not from this.
Not from this, definitely. Not from this.
And it's interesting because we have a relative that works in the medical industry that is like really genuinely scared of this thing to the point where they didn't want to work for a couple of months at least until, you know, the curve had flattened or whatever. And they wanted, I think they had an issue with the facility because they wanted to wear a full respirator, like a painting, gas mask, double filtered and rubber sealed mat, and they were like, no, that's too scary for the patients.
With an O2 tank on their back?
Not quite. Okay. But almost.
Like a fireman.
A genuine fear of deathly afraid. And they're in the medical industry.
Wow.
So it's hard for me. Even sometimes I think, well, maybe there's something going on. Some would have to really have, they had to have seen something to be affected that deeply, whether, but the, just the way it's framed, it's like everything is COVID now. So, and the parameters are, well, you have no symptoms, almost no symptoms, or you're dead in 2 days and everything in between.
Huh.
Like how does that doesn't make sense to me that's could be one thing that's so dramatically different in effect on different people. So,
well, I still think there's only a few people in this world that lit this fire, and now it's burning out of control. It's flaring up here and there, and they're going to pretend they tamp it down, and it's going to explode probably down in the coming months, if you believe some of the narratives that we're hearing. And I still think the people that lit this fire, dropped that initial match onto the gasoline tank, need to be tried and held accountable for it. Because what they've done is made the whole world crazy. And you don't have to be a fakeologist to think that something other than what we're being told is the reality of what is happening. But the result, all these things, closing business, crushing the economy, that is the real stuff. And I guess that's really what we unfortunately have to deal with. We can try and catch the liars later, but you know, it's a big one, and I don't have any answers other than to just be grateful that I can talk to people like you and your wife. You're both even keeled people, and you see things in a pretty practical way, and at least we're not called crazy for bringing up these ideas. And I guess, Farce, you have to be grateful to your wife that she at least entertains your ideas and doesn't just throw you out on your ear for bringing it up. So at least she hears you out, which is a good thing. Good for your health.
I am grateful because right now my industry is completely underwater.
Yeah.
And, Miss Farce is holding down the fort, and she could literally throw me out on my ear. So I'm very grateful.
Miss Farce, we're both grateful to you. We're grateful for you for keeping him on an even keel and letting him come play in the fakeologist playground, because he's been here a long time, and we really, all the fakeologists that come to this site, like to hear what Farce Value has to say, because he's a very steady, even-keeled voice of reason.
Maybe you guys could send him back to me better than you get him. How about that?
Well, yeah, he has to come here weekly for his sessions, and we'll keep him well-tuned. But really, he's not a radical-sounding person at all. He's
not radical-sounding to you guys.
not at all. He's a very calm, steady, steady voice, and we appreciate him here. And yeah, I don't think you have anything to worry about. And if listening to me give you confirmation that he is a sane person, because we seem to be very on the same wavelength, Farce and I, with our views, then if as long as you think that I'm semi sane, then I think you can say the same about Farce, because
I think he's semi-sane.
Mm-hmm. What he's on to, what he understands, the fakeologist's point of view, I think he's bang on, and We don't have to convince anyone else, but if they ever come to us for what we think is going on, we can give a very steady, even-keeled, I think, explanation for what's happening. But sounds
well,
like...
I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm glad. I mean, I know he appreciates me. What I think for all fakeologists who are in a relationship with somebody who may not be a fakeologist is... I know, I mean, he's called me and said, hey, I need you to come down to this event, you know, come make me look good. And I'll go and I'll do that. And I'll,
nice.
You know, talk to his friends and, you know, get dressed up and do the whole thing and make him look good. It's got to work the other way around, too. You know, you can't be so deep in that you can't get out when your spouse needs you to come out and do something.
Mm-hmm. What do you need him to come out and do? Just talk normally and not shudder when we bring up a current event?
Be a normie.
Be entertaining. Be pleasant. And and the thing is that, you know, he'll drag his feet and like just, you know, delay and, you know, we've got to leave the house and he's going to stop for a cigarette first. And, you know, before, and it's like, good God, you know, we got to go. Let, you know, it'll just drive. And then when we get wherever we're going, he has a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so
he doesn't have to look into one more PSYOP before you go. Is that what you're saying? He could just snap to it and get out of the house and
just get with the program. Like, let's just go. Like, leave it behind. You'll still be here. The blog will still be here. Yeah. All his pals will still be here.
Yeah, we're not leaving.
Yeah, so let's go do our thing, and then you can come back.
All right,
but we do have a good time together.
Well, I think we've learned a lot tonight. We've done some marriage therapy. We've got you guys talking about fakeology. I think this has been a good call. I think we really learned a lot.
Well, good
stuff.
Absolutely.
I think you've got a really good wife there, Mr. Farsville. You better hold on to that girl, and I guess you need to. Just give certain nights to fakeologists and the rest to your wife, and just act as normal and as calm as can be, and not worry about all this research. It'll still be there, as she said.
Yeah, I think I have. I've been able to tone it down quite a bit in the past few years. I think eventually you just accept that these things are going to happen, and that's the problem about you talk about obsession, but they don't stop.
No.
Psyops don't stop.
No,
there's
no.
There's always a new one to look into.
Every day.
After a period of time, you can go, they're at it again. Whatever.
Every day.
I'm going to just live.
All right. Well, I want to close out and thank both of you for joining me. This has been very interesting. We don't normally get a non-fakeologist point of view on the show, but I think it's been educational and inspirational in a way. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. You can come back anytime, and if you feel yourself going down the rabbit hole and you need a little more information on 9/11 or JFK or Oklahoma or just about any major big media event that you can remember, we have something to tell you about it. So if you're bored one day and you need any help, or if you want us to deal with Forest Value, give him a smackdown, you can come back anytime.
All right. It's a deal. And I'll take you up on that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. And we'll close out with a little more COVID cooties. I don't know why. This song just gets to me every time. So we'll listen to it again. See you, guys.
I'm so lonely here. I think I've got a real bad confinement. I'm not staying home. Come take tonight.
emotions.